Welcome in to a recap edition of the Pick Aside Podcast. Shane Orling with Tyler Aki. As always, a lot to break down. A big weekend in football, college and pro. Week 10 in pro football in the books. Week 11 in college. Tyler, how we doing?
I need you to talk me off the ledge, dude.
Why?
This Cade Horton future I have.
Oh, no.
That comes to a close tonight. 40-1. I close as the favorite. And now all of a sudden, I'm scrolling Twitter today, and I see all the Polymarket stuff that it's what, Drake Baldwin with like a 90% chance to win tonight?
Yeah, because he won the BBWA, right?
Whatever it is. The BBWA.
What did he win? Did he win something?
He didn't win anything.
What was the Nightingale thing you sent me? Just so I can... official BBWA will be announced, right?
That was his speculation.
Catcher Drake Baldwin is the favorite in the NFL.
Cade won the Sporting News one, which obviously doesn't mean anything for me. But this is the one that counts, and now I'm seeing all the Polymarket stuff say Drake Baldwin's going to win Rookie.
Is it all off the Nightingale tweet?
I don't know. I don't think it is, because I think I saw tweets from like last night or like an hour before the Nightingale tweet.
Do any books still have awards markets up?
No. You can only get them on like Polymarket and Kalshear, stuff like that.
Because if it's all moving off of the Nightingale tweet, then I think you're fine. Maybe you just mistyped.
Which he is... I've never needed Bob Nightingale to be wrong more than I do tonight. Like, right now, I need him to be so wrong.
I'm just looking through the replies. I feel like Cade Horton's probably going to win. He did win the Sporting News. Like, I just be okay with it. Can you cash it out?
No, I've never been given a cash out. He moved from... 40-1 to the favorite overnight, and I've never been offered a cash out. Although Waddle a couple weeks ago did say, "I'll pay you $500 for the ticket."
Well, you should have done that.
I should have done that. But 40-1, going to go down the drain tonight.
Okay, now there's all these weirdos. I mean, Twitter, you just get the robots, and you get these people saying that they've been buying Drake Baldwin on Kalshi.
See, that's the same. I literally doom scrolled my entire train ride in. I Twitter searched Drake Baldwin and I Twitter searched Cade Horton. And all the things are like, it's Cade Horton or we ride. And then all the Drake Baldwin stuff is way more sophisticated and way smarter. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm going to lose this thing. I'm totally going to lose this thing today.
I just can't imagine it's not Cade Horton. I just can't. I can't. And I don't care what the Kalshi market says, because who knows? Like, it's just people buying things.
I texted Jesse about it. I go, talk me off the ledge, kid. And he just sends back two shrug emojis.
Oh, yeah. You're fucked. I got nothing for you.
He's letting me jump.
I got nothing for you. I mean, I got to do the same thing, because I bought when Tarek Skubal was like a plus 105 after one of his outings, I bought really big on a Cy Young bet. That now feels like it's going to pay off, but you never really know.
Never really know.
And the way baseball does their rewards is egregious. We should have announced this months ago.
Yeah, Rookie of the Year is one, though, that like weird shit happens all the time. All the time. Especially on a year like this where there's no clear-cut guy. Because like if Drake Baldwin wins, I get it. He's definitely deserving of the award.
Sure.
You look at the numbers, like an 800 OPS for a catcher, a rookie catcher, is phenomenal. Anyway, that's the baseball ranting I have for you today.
That's where your head is. I mean, how am I ever going to get you to talk football?
Man, like.
I don't know, dude. 118 innings at 2.6 ERA. Come on. That's the rookie of the year. How could that not be the rookie of the year?
How many innings? You said 118?
Yeah. 118 innings and a 2.67 ERA.
In the second half that he had.
And it's a regular season award. Yeah, the second half ERA was like sub 2. He was outstanding. That's your rookie of the year.
All right.
It'll be an all-time miss.
A valiant effort by you.
This will
knock me off the ledge.
I'll just say this. This is going to be your Bo Nix moment.
This is going to be your Bo Nix Heisman. A moment where Bo Nix gave away the award.
Sure,
there
but...
There has not been a moment where Cade Horton's given away the award.
It's still... This is your Bo Nix Heisman moment. Everybody's got one. I hope for your sake that you survive it.
That I have another one down the road instead.
All right. You want to recap a little football?
Yeah.
We're going to get to some storyline stuff and just like a rundown kind of thing. I'm going to start this by saying, if you listened to the shows last week, the picks episodes, and you followed me, boy, did we have a fucking dream weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler, I went 14-4.
Wow, look at you. I was sitting about 500 for the week, so hopefully you listened to Shea more than you listened to me.
Houston laying one, winner. Georgia, Mississippi State over, winner. Texas Tech quad bomb, winner. Over 50, Indiana, Penn State, shout out Fernando Mendoza, winner. Under 48.5, A&M, Mizzou, loser. Under 42, Oregon, Iowa, winner. Under 45.5, Vandy, Auburn, loser. And then it's just winners. Bama, winner. Hawaii, winner. Baltimore. Hawaii,
good to wake up to.
Dude, oh, great. They crushed San Diego State. 38-6.
To 6-0 against the spread as a home dog.
Been great work by you.
Jones.
And then the NFL, I had a rough start. I had the Ravens winning, the lay in four. Tampa lost. Felt like I had a chance, but never really materialized. The under in Jacksonville-Houston never had a shot. But the under in New Orleans and Carolina, won. Miami plus 9.5, won. Rams lay in 4.5, won. Chargers lay in 2.5, won. Just well everywhere done. I looked, well I was winning bets. It was an absolutely incredible week.
The one that felt best was Miami.
Yeah, that
did. 9.5-point dog and then outright blowout winner.
That did feel great. Good. Texas Tech was the one for me because
quad bomb for you too.
Went big on it. Felt like it was always going to be that way. And even though Texas Tech offensively didn't play very well, I think some of their sets. Some of their sets suck. Their red zone offense is terrible.
Well, not even that, but like just the sacks that Baron Morton took in the game, too. And he clearly got hurt at one point, too.
Well, I just don't get, not to geek out about it, like Texas Tech football. I don't even know how many people watched. But you get in the low red zone, and you're running this same offense where you've got every wide receiver lined up outside the hashes and a five-man O-line. I'm like, can we compact these formations a little bit?
Run the football.
Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense the way they run their offense. But defensively, they're incredible. David Bailey is the first Shea guy of the season, and I am starting the prayer circle.
Okay.
We're getting David Bailey to the Bears. Although I fear the Bears might win too many games.
I was going to say, well, then you better root for Texas Tech to not win the Big 12 this year.
Yeah.
If you want that.
I think the Bears are going to win too many games, which is not a terrible thing to have happen either. But yeah, Texas Tech probably felt like my best bet of the weekend. Other than that, I felt really good about the Rams. Getting them in at 4.5. Mm. They closed at 6.
Yeah.
And that was none of those numbers were ever in doubt. I felt really good about the Chargers. Just the read on it being, I think Pittsburgh's fake. And boy, are they. They stink.
That was bad.
All right. Let's get into some of the rundown stuff. Well, I guess I'd ask, like, Tampa, the worst bet, I guess. I feel like I didn't have one that was terrible. I guess the under in Vandy Auburn because it ended up being a shootout. But I'd happily play that same thing again. Same deal, Texas A&M and Mizzou. Mizzou scored a late one to send it over. I'd gladly play the under there again. Tampa, I was always going to bet. It's just New England proved themselves more than anything.
Tampa, that bet, I'd make it again 100 times.
And like,
and I may lose 90 of them. I don't care. I'd make, I think the process was right.
The Houston-Jacksonville game felt like a fever dream, so I don't care that I lost an under there. Like, the whole thing was wacky.
Yeah.
I didn't have some terrible bet that I felt awful about this week. It's just a really nice week for me.
Yeah.
Not to brag.
Yeah. Tip my hat to you. Right before the show, you were transferring the Venmo funds.
I know. It felt really good.
Yeah.
Things felt really good today.
Big number pours.
What a start.
For the week.
There's nothing better than a Monday. Where do you want this sent? There's nothing better than that on a Monday. I felt great.
Venmo or Cash App. That text from the bookie, always the best.
All right. So let's get into some of the rundown stuff because I want to start with the college side of things. There are some things to take away. A&M body bags an opponent yet again and not even competitive. Mizzou was DOA here.
Yeah.
Elko's defense is incredible. Marcel Reed has done enough to make this offense go. Is it time finally for you and I to remove the house of cards and the fragile labeling and just accept A&M is a national title contender?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean I'm not going to not bet against them the rest of the year. I mean, you have that end of season matchup against Texas, which could be very, very important. But no, I mean, look at what Texas A&M's done so far. At this point, you can't deny it. And even you and I, after the LSU game where they went on the road, we were kind of like, all right, you can't really deny this anymore. What they're doing is fantastic. It was a third string quarterback for Mizzou. But that's not to take away from anything because they were dominant offensively against a defense that both you and I think has been very, very good this year. And that, to me, is the bigger story of what A&M has done offensively. You look at these last couple of weeks, they haven't scored sub-30 since September. Like, this offense has been humming, and I think that was one of our biggest question marks with A&M after the Notre Dame game was, how sustainable is this offense? Because we looked at that Notre Dame game and said, oh, maybe Notre Dame's defense isn't as good as we thought.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, you look at what A&M's done with rattling off these 30 and 40 point performances every single week. You can't deny it at this point. You can't.
And I think that they honestly could have an argument to be the number one team in the country with the gauntlet that they've had to go through.
The resume is better.
Yeah, what Indiana went through against Penn State. Look, you don't apologize for winning. Indiana's in a point where they don't need style points. They just need victories. So you win a game any way you can, especially on the road as a school that, for the first time in history, won in Happy Valley. But if you put Indiana's resume up against A&M's, it's not close.
And your three best wins in a 9-0 season are all on the road.
Yeah.
In very hostile environments. You went to Notre Dame. You went to LSU. Mizzou, not as much. But those first two, it doesn't matter how good or bad the team is. You know you're walking into a death trap. And they survived both of them.
They went to, and I know this doesn't matter to people because you'll say, well, LSU blows. They got Brian Kelly fired. They went to LSU when LSU was ranked. And yeah, like you said, they were losing at halftime. And they got a coach fired. They've just hit a point of legitimacy where, like, if the College Football Playoff Committee tomorrow ranks A&M 1, I won't fight it.
No.
I think it's deserved. They've just been so good. And, like, the Ohio State resume really doesn't exist. Their big win was Texas. They haven't played a big game since. They really won't play a big game until the Big Ten title game. Indiana, yeah, you have the win at Oregon, but that's about it. A&M's got 3, 4, 5 of these. Yeah. Same thing with Bama. Like, could Bama be 2 even with the loss? Because the resume that they're starting to stack is also, frankly, unbelievable.
Yeah.
They survived a gauntlet in the SEC where they won every single game, 4 consecutive games against ranked opponents. They won them all, and they just keep winning. Like, maybe I'm at a point where I kind of look at this and go, are A&M and Bama the two best teams in the country?
I would still probably put Ohio State 1, but if you're asking me to take it based off of resume, because, listen, it's not like Ohio State is going out there and just skating by these teams. I mean, they're dominating all of these teams. We're looking at pretty much an identical resume of what Michigan had in the cheating year.
True.
Which, do we need to launch an investigation?
Does Ohio State know the other team's plays? Hmm. That's how Matt Patricia's been a good defensive coordinator. Go figure.
So I'm just saying, like, it does look a lot like the results that we saw Michigan get, where they didn't really do anything the whole year until they got to that final game against Ohio State and outright won. It's kind of the same thing, and it's probably going to be the same thing. We'll see what happens against Michigan, but listen, if Ohio State doesn't win the Michigan game this year, then we have to have some real conversations about some voodoo magic.
There's no way Ohio State loses to Michigan this year. There's just no way. And like, I'm the guy last year who said bet Michigan and got laughed at, and Michigan won the game outright. There's no way Ohio State loses to Michigan this year. Big 12 had the game of the week. Texas Tech, BYU, top 10 matchup in Lubbock. Texas Tech won it convincingly, which leads me to the question, is the Big 12 done? Like, even if it's a collision course between these two teams in a Big 12 title, do we see the second matchup going any differently?
No, I would imagine the second matchup goes exactly the same. I mean, you and I laid it out pretty much perfectly. That defense is going to be way too overwhelming for BYU. I think heading into the fourth quarter, BYU had only had 3 plays in Texas Tech territory.
Yeah.
Also, like, they could not move the ball past midfield. And I just look at the other teams in the conference. They have a little bit of an uphill climb to get there, but I think the only team that could give Texas Tech a game is Utah. Just looking at it, because it's kind of a styles make fights type of game where you could have just a low scoring. It's like 13-10 heading into the fourth quarter, and then you just need someone to make a play in the fourth.
Utah's problem is they lost to BYU in Provo.
Yeah.
So Utah getting there, you'd need BYU to lose, what, twice? Which is not impossible. I mean, they get TCU this week. TCU's no layup. Yeah.
Then at Cincy, that won't be an easy game.
At Cincy's very losable for BYU. If they were at UCF, I'd say it could be, but they're not.
If you go at Cincy and lose, that gives Cincy an inside track.
Gives Cincy the leg up. The problem for Cincy is Utah crushed Cincinnati. Like, this is, if all these teams,
we're running it back. Is this just going to be the theme of the Big 12 where, all right, we're not going to be the most talented conference, but we're going to be the most fun to watch in the month of November from seeding and conference title aspects?
That's what I said last week. Every year it's this way. And we'll get to another conference in a moment that's just similar. But due to a different thing where they all suck. No, I just like Utah, this could work, but it's going to be just this funky, like if each of these teams takes one more loss, then we're going to be at the end of the season going, we have a 7-way tie. And because of this 15th tiebreaker, Houston is going to go play Texas Tech in the Big 12 title. Who knows? But I just kind of feel like no matter what the result is, Texas Tech's going to win the conference.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If you, I mean, I'm sure the odds bear that out too, but they just look like the most complete team. Baron Morton, that's the thing that scares me. That's what's holding them back in my eyes from not just making the playoff, but like winning a playoff game.
Yeah.
Because I think they'll get into the playoff at this point. But winning a playoff game, it's going to be because of the offense. The defense, listen, the type of playoff game they're going to play is like they'll lose the game 24-3.
Yeah.
They'll play Ole Miss and lose 24-3.
And you'll come out of it thinking their defense played great and they just had no shot.
Yeah.
Like that, I'm back firmly in the pretender territory. I do think their defensive line's a non-negotiable, but the way that they call their offense, the way it looks, and Baron Morton, I just don't believe in any of it enough. Run the fucking football. Bring your receivers into block and run the ball. This whole deal where they spread the field out wide, your quarterback isn't good enough for that.
Yeah.
You don't have Julian Say in here.
Yeah, right.
All right, on to the ACC. This conference has officially cannibalized itself. I don't care who wins. I don't think any of the schools in the conference care who wins. I don't think any of them are particularly interested in winning the conference. Virginia vomited down their pants against Wake Forest at home. You lose that game outright? That's disgusting. How is that possible? So now Georgia Tech, after shitting themselves against NC State, sits back atop the ACC. Does anyone want to win this conference? Because my takeaway here is only one of these teams is going to be repped in the playoff.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't even think you can really make a case. Like, and Louisville, too. Louisville was a team that looked like they had a little bit of momentum, and then they lose a home game.
Shit themselves.
Overtime against Cal. Like, there were just some there have been some really bad losses in this conference the last 2 weeks. You know, there's a saying in pro golf, all right? You can't win the tournament on the first day, but you can lose it.
Yep.
There's like six teams right now that are trying to lose this thing. And for some reason, they're all staying afloat.
Do you know who I think ends up winning it?
Like getting to the title game or winning?
Getting to the title game and winning the title.
Pitt.
Yep.
I'm with you.
Their quarterback, they made a change at quarterback. The offense has been blazes ever since they made the change. Defensively, you know what they're going to offer. It's a Pat Narduzzi-led team. They got Notre Dame this week, which is non-conference loss. That actually helps them because then they get the chance to beat Georgia Tech and they get the chance to beat Miami at home. They win both of those games after the Notre Dame admitted loss. Like, they're firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah.
They're going to come out of nowhere. They're going to win the ACC. They're going to steal the playoff bid. And then they're going to get their fucking throats kicked in by whatever team they have the misfortune of seeing in the first round of the playoff.
And don't look now, but they also have the highest scoring offense in the conference, too.
That's my point.
It's a significant margin. Like,
they made a quarterback switch, and they've just been dialing ever since.
Mm-hmm. Listen, this Pitt team's pretty fun. They are, so
save the Nardog's job for the 15th year in a row.
He's just going to be there
forever.
He's their Kirk Ferentz, their what should have been Pat Fitzgerald, where the only person that can lose you this job is you.
Yep. All right, last question I have for you in college. What do we do with Oregon?
Okay. I think Oregon is a listen, this week's game was whatever, right? You go on the road in the rain like that. The fact that you even came back and won that game.
They got the big throw at the big moment.
Yeah, like Dante Moore made a, he's not going to win the award, but he made a Heisman caliber play. And the kicking in that game too. Like Sappington was fantastic in that game. He's been there forever. I feel like he was there when we were talking about like the Pennix games.
The kid,
Washington.
The kid for Iowa drilling from 58 in a monsoon. I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm like, how is Cairo Santos still have a job? This kid from a college kid at Iowa hits from 58 in a monsoon.
Yeah.
And I had to watch the Bears punt from the 36. I digress.
But anyway, listen, Oregon slotting at 9 in the playoff, to me, was ridiculous from the outset. Your lone loss is to the number 2 team in the country, albeit in your home stadium, but still, like, there's no shame in being 5-1. Now, the interesting part of this wrinkle as well is USC, if somehow Indiana had lost that game against Penn State, then we have a little bit of a discussion there, yep, and a little bit of a round robining to find that last playoff spot. But no, I think there's no shame in what Oregon's resume is, and I think that they're much better than what the ninth ranking that they have next to their name is right now by the playoff committee.
Their problem is going to be, do you think they go 3-0 the rest of the year? They got Minnesota at home, they got USC at home, and then they go to Washington. Two of those three games are against ranked opponents. USC's gotten right a little bit. Their offense has been awesome lately. Yeah. Obviously, with Mayock quarterback, it's been good.
That's a fun game.
It's a really fun game. Yeah, and it's an old Pac-12 rivalry. Like, mm-hmm, Oregon finishes out the year in the old school Pac-12 rivalry spots in the Northeast, which I love.
Yeah.
But those are two big-time games. And if they drop either of them, like, the bridge I'm building here is, could we be living in a world where we do actually end up with a 2-bit Big Ten and a 6-bit SEC?
No. I feel pretty good that some way, somehow, the Big Ten's going to slide 3 in.
That's because, the max, though, right?
Yeah,
there's no world the Michigan, USC, Washington is getting it.
No, because I think the winner of that Oregon-USC game probably finds themselves in. Like, let me look through. Because USC has a home game against Iowa this week. That's a ranked game. Then you have the game against Oregon. Wow. If you win that, all of a sudden you're looking pretty nicely at 10-2 because you closed the year with UCLA. 10-2 in the Big Ten. I get that there's no real banner wins on this schedule, but
there's banner losses.
Yeah, but the committee, I think, would love to put USC in the playoff too.
Of course they would.
As like the 11.
You get the especially if you lose Oregon, you keep the West Coast by putting USC in. You get the LA market, you get a traditional brand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd probably be cannon fodder for whoever they get in the SEC. Yeah. They've lost basically every big time game they've played this year.
Well, USC, like, Lincoln Riley strikes me as the coach too in a playoff. We've seen what Lincoln Riley in the playoff looks like before, right? Just gets blasted like 45-10.
Yep.
To like Bama or something like that. But I feel like in a 12-team playoff, they're one of those teams that can be competitive in the first round, but then you get to the second round, they'll get thrown out of the gym.
Do you think the Big Ten's bad?
I don't think it's bad. I think anytime you have who I think should be the favorite to win the national title, like, it's tough to call a conference bad when you've got, A, the number one and two team in the country based off of the playoff rankings, and B, Ohio State, the defending champ, who's playing fantastic, pretty much wire to wire. It's not their fault that some of these teams just aren't what they were supposed to be.
That's fair.
It's not their fault that Penn State sucks this year.
That's fair. I was going to bring up Illinois, because I wonder what you do with Illinois and Bielema in a year like this.
Can I give you a little breaking news here?
I just saw it. I'm so unsurprised.
Wow.
I said this on the morning show this morning. This is a perfect point to pivot to NFL anyways. Mm-hmm. Brian Daboll has been fired.
Yep.
Good.
Bears got a coach fired. How about that?
Good.
I mean, that was...
Can I tell you...
What happened yesterday? You know what it was yesterday? It was the tucking your tail between your legs that took place on what could have been the half-yard line and not going for it.
No, it was bad. It was utter nonsense. And it's the third time this year he's pulled this shit. You had a terrible loss in Dallas. You had and you and I get to be angry about it because we were win total over guys on the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
We believed in this team.
Yeah.
We believed in this bald fuck.
They're not 2-8 bad.
No, they should be 5-5.
Yes.
They had a 90% chance of winning the Denver game. They had a 90% chance of winning the Dallas game. They had a 90% chance of winning yesterday. They lost all three. They're 2-8. They should be 5-5. But this bald fuck can't figure out simple fucking football. You're up 2.5 scores in Denver with 8 minutes left. You never have your rookie quarterback throw the ball there. You gift Denver a short field because he throws an interception. How about yesterday in Chicago? You've got a rookie quarterback who's already been concussed three times this year. Mm-hmm. Let's just design 100 runs for him.
Yeah.
Oh, and then on the 1 yard line, cowered out.
Yeah. I get that it worked, but still, like, it's everything about the operation. And to be honest, like, Brian Daboll's going to go back to be an offensive coordinator somewhere, and he's going to be fantastic.
Probably will be good.
Because he was fantastic in Buffalo. Like, I'm trying to think of who is the team. Atlanta. Whoever Atlanta, like, if Raheem Morris gets fired at the end of the year, whoever Atlanta brings in to be their head coach should bring Brian Daboll to help guide Michael Penix. Because, like, I was thinking Minnesota's not going to do it. Kevin O'Connell can do that. Obviously not New England or Chicago. Washington?
Washington's interesting if they move on from Cliff.
I don't think they will because this year is going to be chalked up to injury, but you may miss out on it, but I don't think NFL teams operate like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Atlanta.
Interesting. He's a terrible head coach. He's a total moron. He's clueless. Yesterday, it's one thing to kick the field goal. It's another to get a penalty on the field goal try and decline it when you're gaining half a yard closer to the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. If they go for it and get it, they win the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's really that simple. I just thought it was utter nonsense, and he deserved to be fired. It's a year and a half too late.
Yeah.
But good job by the Giants. Good job by the Bears getting him fired.
Yeah.
Good job by Caleb Williams. Yeah. Because he's the one who willed the Bears to victory yesterday and got a coach fired.
Yeah.
Big spot. Do you want to talk, Caleb, just off the top here?
Yeah, right there.
Because you tell me if I'm doing too much or going too far. Yesterday was the game I needed to see where I now believe, like, you have a franchise quarterback in Chicago.
I don't think the box score does justice to what Caleb Williams truly did out there. Like,
I agree.
You see 20 of 36 with the completion percentage there, and that's not very good. But when you put in the context of, I think, what PFF logged him for 6 drops. Some other people have gone out and counted like 8 or 9.
Yep.
If you give me half of those, I feel way better about it. Or give me 3 or 4 of them, I feel really good about. Then that you're talking about a good completion percentage of like around 66%. You take that. You add in another touchdown for him if Zacchaeus catches that ball in the end zone. Situationally, I thought he was great. Did he have misses? Absolutely. That's just going to be who he is, though. He's probably going to have misses. And frankly, every quarterback has misses game to game. This, to me, we've seen so many games with Caleb Williams where, all right, he just has to pull the rabbit out of his hat in the fourth quarter, put on the Superman cape, whatever analogy you want to use. This, to me, was one of the better down-to-down performances by Caleb Williams. And the success rate, which is usually the best indicator of your down-to-down, how well you're playing, usually that's the best indicator. It's probably not going to look that great, but I don't think it's necessarily his fault for a lot of it.
The most important thing to me was, one, the operation was smooth, only 3 penalties all game, and 2, he didn't take sacks. And not only did he not take sacks, he fucking should have. There are like multiple times where he should have been on his ass.
I think they've counted 12 pressures for New York in that game. To have a pressure to sack rate when you're pressured 12 times of 0
is insane.
Incredible.
And it's also not like he was just delivering the ball, or the ability to evade sacks. Mm-hmm. I said this to Pat the Designer earlier today. He did it yesterday to a level I've really only seen Patrick Mahomes in his best years avoid sacks, where it's like, you've got him. Just wrap him up and tackle him. Oh, he's gone.
Yep.
And you can't figure out how he got away from it. Mm-hmm. Like, how many times can I watch Brian Burns unblocked, free rush on the blind side, and somehow Caleb spins out?
The NFL leader in sacks, Brian Burns.
It was unbelievably impressive. And again, I'm watching the game and I'm going, this is not going to really be satisfying the way I need it to be, because when it's 24-10 in the fourth quarter and I'm sitting there going, I don't really think anybody's played that badly. They're just getting beat. But to have Caleb then come back and do it the way that he had done it down to down all game, that was the one I needed to see, where I'm like, this is the guy. He's a franchise quarterback.
It was so high level. And you talk about the sack prevention too. He's on pace for 26 sacks this year.
It's incredible.
After being sacked the third most in NFL history in his rookie season. Like, that, it is the most impressive trait, building on year 1 to year 2. Now hopefully year 2 to year 3 is improving some of the accuracy stuff.
That's it. I've always said too, like, I'm a pretty, not that I'm a quarterback expert, I'm not like some QB whisperer who can tell you about mechanics or any of that shit, but I, knowing the history of the game, having watched enough football, there's 2 stats that mean a lot to me in terms of, are you going to be a good quarterback in the NFL? One is completion percentage, the other is sack rate. And it's super rare that quarterbacks are able to meaningfully improve either of them. What Caleb has done with his sack rate is Josh Allen level stuff, where it just, you don't see it. So I'm at a point now, he's got that. Let's get the completion percentage up a couple ticks, and you've got a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah. I think probably need a little more than a couple ticks, but yeah. And the way that this offense is designed to, the one way that you can kind of overcome some of the quarterback miscues from an accuracy standpoint is explosives. Who's number one in the league in explosive plays right now?
The Bears.
Chicago Bears. So when you have that level of explosive play ability in your bag, you can live with having a little bit lower of a quarterback completion percentage just because you know that third and 10, you still have a chance here. And that to me, like yesterday was one, I'll admit, like the last couple of years, like last year and then this year with Drake May, like you've kind of looked in the rearview mirror as a Bears fan and as a Caleb Williams fan and been like, you're always kind of comparing him to the other guys. Yesterday, I never felt any of that. Even with Drake May going out and doing what he did, I didn't feel any of that. And it's weird. You hear everyone talk about fourth quarter. This guy's blood pressure goes down. His heart rate's the same. Everyone else's is amplified. And for me as a Bears fan, when they were down 10 in that fourth quarter, I kind of felt the same way.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like my heart rate leveled with what Caleb's was because I felt the same way as him. I felt like even though they're down double digits, they've got a great chance to win this game because of the guy that's under center.
There's a trust factor with him now. Yes. Like, he's just done it enough times. Fourth quarter, close game. I have no doubt he's going to get the job done. He's just been great at it, really, ever since he's entered the league. And I was going to bring up, because the next team I wanted to talk about, it's sort of a similar thing to what you were saying, where you can survive a bad thing because of the explosive plays. The Patriots are no different, and we have to talk about them. We both got this wrong. We both love Tampa. Patriots went down to Tampa, and like the score might look close. That was an ass kicking.
Mm-hmm.
They went belt to ass in Tampa's own building, and to me, they have very firmly become just straight up Super Bowl contenders. Like it's difficult to roadmap away where they don't win the AFC East at this point after what Buffalo did. Yeah. Buffalo's effectively three games behind the Patriots right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many weeks left. And now that you've gone on the road and beaten a good team and done it that convincingly, where they ran the ball, they stuffed the run, their defense has been elite.
You got the big plays from Henderson. Listen, if you're going to get Travion Henderson ripping off Jonathan Taylor runs, then you're going to be in business.
Now it feels like they're giving him the football. And the point about explosive plays, they get him in bunches, and it offsets the sacks that Drake May takes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has the completion percentage and not the sack rate. Dude, if you could Voltron Drake May and Caleb Williams, it'd be the best quarterback in the history of the league.
Yes.
Like the two pieces, it's like the two pieces of the puzzle, and you put them together, and you get the greatest quarterback who ever lived. I think the Patriots are real at this point. There's no more doubting them.
They're 5-0 on the road this year. You know how we already know how tough it is to win on the road in the NFL, and for them to, with a second year quarterback, a new head coach, for them to be 5-0 on the road this year is impeccable.
Yeah, it's
and, like, that's the stuff where, if you're a solid to good team, you're probably 3-2 on the road. But to be 5-0, you can't deny that. It doesn't matter who you play. If you're 5-0 on the road in the NFL, you're a damn good football team.
Like, I was thinking about the power rankings that I do on the Cap'n Hood show, where I do the top 10, and I want to ask you this before I actually do it.
Okay.
Is it last week I think I had the Bills 2 or 3 and I had the Patriots like 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
Is it unreasonable if I just swap them? Like, is that going too far with the Patriots, putting them in that vaunted category?
Put them one?
Not one. One is reserved for a team we both love. If I'm like vaulting the Patriots into the top five, going too far?
They're tied for the best record in the league right now. They're playing every bit the part of it. Like I've said, they're 5-0 on the road. That to me is just the mind-numbing statistic of the season.
All of this to say, there is nothing more Bills that I've seen in my life than a season where the AFC is built for you to win it. Everything is set up for you to win it. The Chiefs start 0-2. They go to 2-3. They're 5-4. They're going to play all their games on the road as wild card in all likelihood because Denver's been so good, at least in the win column.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore starts 1-5. Baltimore, even if they win the division, they have no prayer of getting the one seed, and you beat them.
Mm-hmm.
This year was tailored for you to go win the AFC, and you're going to gag your own division.
Right.
There is nothing more Bills.
Yeah. No, I mean, the way that Buffalo looked yesterday, it's crazy. They just have these games every once in a while. And sometimes it comes against divisional teams. And that's the other thing, too, is now you've dropped another divisional game. So that'll hurt you potentially in the tiebreaker if this does get, if you do somehow draw this thing to a tie by the end of the year. So, yeah, it's all kind of a mess right now for Buffalo. Listen, they're still going to make the playoffs. They're still probably going to win a playoff game. And they're still going to be one of the more dangerous teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But there's questions.
The ultimate irony, too, is they're going to make the playoffs. And if their opening round playoff game is in New England, they're going to be favored in the game,
yeah,
too.
Like, right.
That's the funny part is where I look at, I want to, the power rankings, I'd like to put New England firmly ahead of them. But I'm like, if these two teams played today, I know which one would be favored. It
but
wouldn't be the Patriots.
This thing off a resume, there's no way you can put Buffalo ahead of New England right now. You just can't.
Of course not. We got to talk about the Ravens. And yeah. We'll lump it in with Sunday Night Football because, look, man, what the Steelers did last night was grotesque. It was one of the worst performances of the year. It's up there with the Falcons getting 30-0'd by the Panthers. It's up there with what the Falcons looked like against the Dolphins. A Mike Tomlin team looking the way the Steelers did last night,
yeah.
I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
That was abysmal. Rodgers running into the end zone, coughing up the ball while Khalil Mack chasing him down. Like, there was just so much about it that was un-Steeler-like. Mm-hmm. I think they're blowing this division, and I think they're not even going to make the playoffs.
I'm not ruling them out from winning the division. Just because Baltimore won this past week, again, a lot of what my feelings on Baltimore are predicated on how they're going to play in the division. Because, yeah, like the Steelers are not great this year, but we've seen plenty of times where the Steelers haven't been great and they go out and they'll dominate the Ravens. Same thing with the Bengals. Even though the Bengals, it's a wild ride for them, but the Bengals can certainly beat the Ravens. That's the problem is I think the division, when you've got five divisional games left, I still think it's up for grabs because of the fact that you've got all of these games, important games, head-to-heads that are going to determine tiebreakers. I still think any of the top three in this division are live to win it, frankly.
Live to win it is fine. I never made the bet. I'm at a point where I feel like Baltimore's going to win it. Their defense the last month has been outstanding, and it coincides with getting healthy, so it makes it a little more believable. Lamar's back. I wasn't overly impressed with what they did in Minnesota. A lot of it had to do with I don't think J.J. McCarthy is ready to be an NFL quarterback. I mean, you take
that
eight false start penalties at home.
Yeah.
How does that ever happen? But Baltimore gets out of there with the win, and Pittsburgh looks horrible. And now Baltimore's schedule set up in a way they're going to be favored against the – they are favored against the Browns, 8.5-point favorites. They'll be favored at home against the Jets. They'll be favored at home against the Bengals. And then they play the Steelers at home. And you might be looking at a team that at that point is 7-5 after a 1-5 start.
Yeah. I don't think Baltimore is one of these teams that's capable of these type of runs. Because, yeah, like the defense looks good, but like I think that there's still plenty of glaring holes. It's the same defense still that gave up 44 to a dead Texans team.
The problem,
and I get that, like they've gotten healthy, but there have been bad performances when they were whole.
Sure. The problem for Pittsburgh is going to be if you don't win the division, I don't think you're making the playoffs. I don't know that going to be a wild card team.
I mean, you've got three teams right now at 8-2, and none of them are named the Chiefs or the Bills.
Well, and the even more important thing than that is Pittsburgh, if they don't win the division, is behind the Chargers, they're behind the Bills, and Kansas City is the first team out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kansas City's making the playoffs.
Hunting that down, yeah.
Like, I don't see a world where Pittsburgh gets in and doesn't win the division, and I don't feel like they're winning the division, so I kind of just think they're out.
Yeah.
And I really hope they are. It would be funny. Aaron Rodgers puts the bullet in Mike Tomlin. It would be amazing. NFC North side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Bears legitimately contenders to win the North, or is this all fool's gold against a weak part of the schedule? Because there's two things here. One, the head coach is legit.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback is legit. The defense blows.
Yes.
Special teams had a mountain of problems, and you are 6-3, but you have a negative point differential. Like, there's just too much that red flags me. Like, this is really between the Lions and the Packers, and the Bears are happy to be at the party.
Yeah. I don't think it rules the Bears out from getting a playoff spot, but I just think both of those defenses in Detroit and Green Bay are significantly better than what, and frankly, Minnesota too, are mountains better than what the Bears are right now. However, I'll say this, looking at the Bears' schedule and knowing what we know a little bit about some of the injury report stuff, when you get into that final month, especially when you have a game against two games against the Packers in December and then a game against the Lions in January, I almost look at it as if you get Jalen Johnson back at some point, Kyler Gordon comes back at some point, TJ Edwards should be back sooner rather than later.
Sure.
Then all of a sudden you talk about a totally different defense.
And you might be in business.
You're talking about three of your best, probably your three best players defensively.
So the answer is yes, they're live in the division.
I guess I've talked myself into I've circled my way back.
I don't hate it. Like, the part of why their point differential is negative is because they got blasted in week two and they're still making up for it.
Yeah. My whole thing is, I need to see you do something in the division, because this team has been a disaster in the division last year. They've been a disaster in the division this year. You blew the game against Minnesota. You obviously did what you did against Detroit, and that was not pretty. Like, I would trade the Minnesota win for a loss against the Raiders or the Giants or any of these wins that they've snuck out lately. I'd much rather have the Minnesota win just because it's divisional.
Joe Burrow, limited practice return. He can be activated anytime in the next 21 days. More breaking news.
Oh.
Heavy
day for us.
I know. I wanted to throw that in while we were talking about this, because I would offer you a different opinion.
Does that change the AFC North at all?
No, not for me. No, the Bengals defense is so bad.
It doesn't change anything. But I will say, it can muddy the waters a little bit of, hey, what if Joe Burrow goes out and spins a win against Baltimore?
Sure. My issue with, like, does it change how I look at anybody? No, because they were scoring 40 points anyways and losing.
Flacco, yeah.
Like, I don't think quarterback has been their issue. What I would offer you in the NFC is a different thing, where you look at the playoff standings currently, the top seven teams, the way that they fall. The Bears would be the seven seed, the Lions the six, Rams, Bucks, Packers, Eagles, Seahawks. I think not specifically in this order, but that is your NFC playoff field. I think those are the seven teams that will represent the NFC in the playoffs at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think any team below 500 is
out.
Like,
I think Minnesota's left the chat. Yeah. Dallas is done. The rest of that cellar, it's over.
It's just going to be, can San Francisco hold serve?
But even then,
play in that division too.
They play in that division, and the spot they would be stealing would likely belong to one of the two teams in their division in the playoffs. I don't buy it. I think the injuries have caught up to San Francisco. What their defense looked like yesterday. Their offense didn't even play badly. They lost by 20 points.
Yeah.
Carolina, I've never really firmly bought as a playoff team. They're a fun story, but playoffs are a little bit different. I think this is it. I think the field is what it is.
The more I look at it, listen, I'm not going to rule out San Francisco, but I don't see Carolina making, let me look at the rest of their schedule. I don't see Carolina making this giant leap the rest of the way. Carolina still goes to the Niners, still plays the Rams, still has two more with the Bucks. They have, yeah, like the meat of their schedule. Hell's coming to breakfast, possibly. And you and I both like the Panthers. They've been a fun story this year. But you can't lose that game against the Saints, by the way, at home.
Also, game of the year this week, look ahead, Rams Seahawks, 2-7-2 teams. It's a battle for the one seed in the NFC. Do we have a point spread on that yet?
Probably. I bet we can find one.
I can't wait to watch that game. It's 3:05 on Fox, which kind of stinks.
Ugh.
But that's, Rams are 2.5-point favorites.
At home.
We need to discuss the LA Rams for a moment. They're, like, to me, at this point, comfortably the best team in football.
Well, we've said it for weeks. They are the most complete team. That offense is humming. They never stop. By the way, did you see the great stat about Stafford, too? He's finally a 500 quarterback.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, wins aren't a quarterback stat, whatever. But all the shit that he put up with,
that's
in
awesome,
Detroit for all those years. He is now, I believe the record is 115-115-1. Good for Matt Stafford to just completely resurrect the, not even resurrect, he was a good quarterback in Detroit, just played in a shitty situation, but now he is a good quarterback in a great situation, and it's elevated him into truly that elite tier. That no-look throw he had yesterday, my goodness.
Unbelievable.
My good. And the way he spreads the ball around, too, it doesn't matter when Puka goes out with an injury or if Devontae's out for a little bit. He finds these random tight ends who you didn't even know were on the roster until 30 seconds before, and finds a way to make magic happen.
Dude, he's on pace for like 50 touchdowns and 4 picks.
Drake May is the story of the year, but
Matt
Stafford is the MVP of the league.
100%. I think Stafford should be the favorite today. I think the fact that Drake May is the favorite is a bit ridiculous. Stafford leads the league in touchdowns. He's only thrown two interceptions on the season. He leads the league in yards per game. The passing volume is absurd. His last 6 weeks, it's 20 touchdowns to zero interceptions. He has been stellar. And I think he's leading what is becoming quite comfortably the best team in football.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams are unbelievable.
The defense, my goodness.
McVay and Stafford both have to be so thrilled that they came back for this ride.
Yes.
Because this is, I said it in March, I felt like this team was going to be loaded for bear. And I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back or brag about it. It's just, you're seeing it now, where the defense that they drafted, Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, all these pieces are so good. They've all hit, and now the offense, you have a quarterback who's playing MVP-caliber ball for the first time in what feels like a 30-year career, isn't turning the ball over.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
And it was a great spot by you. Honestly, I remember we did this show right after the Super Bowl, or maybe previewing the Super Bowl last year, and we were talking like Rams.
Yeah.
20-1, fire
yes.
away.
And
it was a great spot by you.
It was the game in Philadelphia that convinced me. The snow game in the NFC title. They should have won. If Kyren doesn't put the ball on the mat twice, they win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the moment where I'm like, no, this isn't just like they made it super far and they can't do this again. Mm-hmm. Their defense is all rookies.
Yeah.
And they're all great.
It's
like
a cheap defense. Your quarterback isn't being paid, like that's the nice thing about having a quarterback. How old is Stafford? Like 37, 38.
Yeah.
The nice thing about having a quarterback that age is you're getting the play that you're getting right now while not having to necessarily pay the price for what that quarterback play
yep.
is. He's not making like the Joe Burrow money.
And it's the value of
He's
getting
giving you Joe Burrow level production.
It's the value of getting your extensions in early too, because now you pay your guy at a discount. Okay, one last thing I wanted to bring up to you, and then anything left for you, I mean, get out of here. I said it was the Dolphins. I said maybe the Raiders. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars have become the absolute worst situation in the NFL.
Okay, I want you to explain this because I kind of get what you're going for here, but I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
We talked about it, like, I mean, long term, like the next 5 years, I don't think there's a more painful existence than the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I talked about it from the Miami perspective of like, you're paying your quarterback and you're awful. At least you're going to be at the top of the draft. The Raider perspective. Mm-hmm. They hired Pete Carroll and totally fucked it up. At least you're going to be at the top of the draft. Jacksonville, you're in year one of a new head coach. You are gagging up games with a $55 million quarterback who you can't move on from for the next couple seasons. You have fucked up your draft picks. You've wasted Brian Thomas Jr. Your defense is not good anymore. And now, like, you are staring down the barrel of a season where you're going to be picking in the late teens, early 20s, and have no real reward for not being good or bad. Like, this is the new Steelers, except maybe worse, because at least the Steelers never sunk 15% of their cap into a shitty player. Lawrence sucks.
Here's what I would counter to you. A, I think there's a better chance that Lawrence can figure this thing out than like Tua or Kyler.
I think they're all in the same boat.
But yeah, they're all kind of in that same boat. They've been heavily paid, and it's not a good situation there. But to me, the draft this year doesn't mean all that much. You and I know that the class of 2027, it's part of why both you and I think really liked what the Jets did at the trade deadline. They're stocking up on 2027 first-round picks. That's the draft you want to be picking in. So, yeah, and Miami and Arizona might be bad teams in those drafts too. However, I think that if Jacksonville, they kind of take a dive next year, and then they can replenish a lot of what they need to do then. Because they're all in like bad, like trick bag situations with the quarterback. You can't move on from them, and they're clearly not good enough.
I guess my fear would be, and you can tell me if this makes sense. The Steelers are a bad situation in part because their ownership is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Where they won't, the Rooney family will not allow them to be bad.
Mm-hmm. The infrastructure is there.
They'll never they'll never lose loyalty to their coaches. It's why there have only been three coaches in the entire ownership of the Rooney family in Pittsburgh. Like, they will allow Tomlin and give Tomlin all of the resources that he needs. I wonder if Shad Khan is similar in the way that he wants to spend on this team, if he will refuse to allow them to truly bottom out, and you end up only cursing yourself where you're stuck in this horrible middle and you can't get out of it. Because there's the idea that they're 5-4. Like, we talked about it last week previewing the game. You're 5-3 and you have a $55 million quarterback and you're going to play Davis Mills and you're only a 1.5-point favorite. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And then you get absolutely punked in the second half.
That's where I just, now you're 5-4 and you, like, all of this stuff is in place and you got the hotshot play caller and you've got a $50+ million quarterback and you got a defense that should be good with big time names who for whatever reason can't produce. Like, I don't know how this gets better.
Mm-hmm. The other name I would throw in there too is Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas.
All the timelines are messed up. And to be honest, I don't really know how much having Tom Brady as an owner is going to help.
Hurt, because he can suck at this. Michael Jordan's a terrible NBA owner.
Right. And, like, we think about, too, like, you bring in Tom Brady because you think he woos a guy like Ben Johnson to your situation.
Oops.
Guess who they didn't get?
Ben Johnson.
They drafted a running back in the first round this year in what is a loaded offensive player class, albeit maybe not at the quarterback position, but you think that Pete Carroll and this team couldn't use a Jackson Dart right now?
They also refused to seriously address the situation with Max Crosby, and this is probably the last year that they'll have to do it because I got news, he's on the decline now. Like, the value is never going to be higher than it was at the deadline, and you didn't move on. You're not going anywhere. Yeah, they're in a brutal spot, and I think between the Raiders, the Jags, and the Dolphins, and maybe Arizona, although they seem to have a pretty comfortable out with Kyler,
yeah,
you're looking at the 3-4 worst situations in football.
Yeah.
How about the news Kyler might go play baseball? Did you see that?
Was that real?
I don't know if I got God or not, but I saw it and I'm like,
I don't even care if you got God.
Seriously?
On that one. That's pretty fucking funny.
The idea being floated that Kyler's like, I could just go play baseball. Like, what in the fuck are we talking about? I guess the interesting part is you've already made $100 million or whatever.
Yeah.
So you might as well go make $40,000 and play an A-ball in, like, the A's organization.
And, like, he would get to the pros, probably. Do the A's still have his rights?
I have no idea how that works.
Boy, the A's have done so well drafting lately with all the guys that they've...
Could he sign just, like, a minor league deal and go straight to somebody's AAA team?
I don't think he could start in AAA, but yeah.
How does that work with a veteran...
He's not a vet.
I know. Like, he'd have to accrue service time, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing is, I'm like, whatever.
This is like the whole trick bag of, could LeBron go play for Duke right now?
Right. Kyler Murray decides he's going back to college, and, like, the A's have 8 years of control over him.
Yeah.
Well, he's 28. How does that work?
I don't know.
It's like Aaron Judge being in the Yankees minor league system until he was 27.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. I really don't.
I thought it was funny. All right. Anything else before we wrap it up?
That's all I got.
That'll do it right here on a recap edition of the Pick Aside podcast. As always, available on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts, youtube.com/@PickAsideESPN. I'll be back later in the week, Thursday, Friday. Thursday will be college. Friday, NFL, all picks, hoping for a repeat of a masterpiece from me this weekend. Tyler, always a pleasure. For Tyler Rocky, I'm Shane Orling. It's the Pick Aside podcast.